This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Our Matrix server is about as free as internet chat can be. Join the existing rooms or create your own at chat.freetalklive.com.
Control and 603-283-6160 is the phone number here. That's 603-283-6160. Today we're talking about a very specific subject, but you can absolutely call in and talk about it with us. We're talking about alternative currencies here with Silver Dave and me, Bonnie, and Colin. And are you tired of the oppressive rules and moderation of the big tech social media sites? Our Mastodon server at social.freetalklive can set you free. Mastodon is free, open source, decentralized, and federated. Multiple apps are available for iOS, Android, Windows, Mac, and Linux. social.freetalklive.com. And as I said, in the studio tonight, you've got me, Bonnie.
Colin, Silver Dave.
And let's go straight into the phones. You're screened, but I forgot to ask your name, caller. You said you have something to talk to Silver Dave about, or something on the topic. Go ahead.
Yeah. Hey, it's Ian calling from the Merrimack County Spiritual Retreat Luxury Federal Wing.
Are you holding your microphone?
I'm listening.
It's like you're really breathing in the microphone, and also, like, just are you holding it up to your face?
That. Yeah, it's probably really echoey in here, too.
Yeah, that's quite a bit.
Sounds much better.
Yeah. I guess... Okay, great. So, good show so far. I'm paying 21 cents a minute to listen, so you guys better keep it good. But no one else has called in to challenge Dave, so I figured I should do that. Dave, I feel like you should stick with the fear-mongering around the government might shut the internet down or shut your internet down, because that's pretty hard to argue against. But the claim that the government can press a button and freeze your Bitcoin is completely without any kind of merit. There's no evidence for that. And if you have evidence for it, I'd love to hear it, because it's a pretty wild claim, and you're going to have some pretty good evidence for it. And considering that the source code for Bitcoin is open to anyone who wants to look at it, then somebody should have seen that by now, because it's some of the most watched code on the planet. So, I mean, what do you have for proof?
That's a great question, and it's great to hear your voice, Ian. So, first of all, I want to talk about access codes, which relates to your question. When you were probably playing video games at a younger age, or maybe people playing it now, basically there was a thing which was called a cheat code, and it would let you type in some sort of like a combination of things, and it would give you like unlimited life or unlimited whatever health.
Yeah, it would cheat you in the game, yeah.
And it would let you get, you know, deeper in the game. Now, the actual reason for that was so that programmers could test the features of the game in order to make sure the game works properly. And that cheat code is actually known as an access code. And that access code allows the programmers to go into the engine compartment of the program, so to speak, and make changes or fix and or repair. And now, so every program, it's funny, I'm not even a computer programmer, but I know this. Every program that's ever been made has an access code because it needs maintenance. It needs repairs like a car. And so Bitcoin has an access code. It has to have an access code because it would need repairs. There would be problems that occur. The programmers have to go in there and adjust it and fix it. And so the person and people or team that created all the different cryptocurrencies, especially Bitcoin, which was funded, heavily promoted, heavily funded, the people who created it, they didn't just create something without giving themselves the ability to control it or influence it.
Let's let,
I'm going to pause.
reply?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I can tell, Dave, that you're not a programmer because it doesn't sound like you know what you're talking about at all. The whoever it was that created Bitcoin, whether it was one person or a team of people or whatever, they released the code right out the gate. It's called open source. And for listeners that don't know what open source is, the difference between closed source and open source is like a Microsoft product, for instance, is closed source. Windows is closed source. They don't want you to know what's going on in there. It's a black box from the outside. Whatever their code is, it's private. They can put whatever access codes or whatever they want in there because you can't audit the code. Open source is what Bitcoin is. Open source is what almost every other cryptocurrency is out there. Meaning the code is open. It is available to anyone who wants to look at it. So if there was a backdoor or an access code or whatever you want to call it, then the various different people, and there are probably hundreds if not thousands of them who have audited this code over the 13, 14 years that Bitcoin has been around now, they would have caught that. They would have seen the backdoor. They would have seen
that's an assumption.
If I could go a step further on this to explain it. So what you have is you'll have code that is written by somebody, and what that code really is just the description. So it's like, if this, then do that. Add these numbers together, do this kind of thing. And those are just, I'll say, like verbal descriptions. They're not written in a way that's easy for people to just read, but they are just written like that. And then when that changes over to like an executable or something like that, it has to run through a compiler. So You know, as a person who uses a computer on a consumer level, you might be used to like, oh, I don't know how this works. I just click on this link and it opens up. But what we're talking about is the actual stuff, because anybody can take that raw text file basically that just says if this, then do that, if that, then this, you know, and they can compile it themselves using their own compilers even.
That's correct.
So I wanted to make a point there, and I'm just trying to remember what you had said last.
What I'm saying
ties in with what he's saying.
So the thing is that you're making an assumption that people are going to find in the code a backdoor. But when you're the creator of something, you know the secrets about it. So when you make something, like for example, when I make different silver things, I know secrets about it. We know in deeper down. And that no one who's analyzing that's necessarily going to understand.
Do you have backdoors in your silver?
Yeah, you have backdoors.
No, but I'm just saying, when you're deeply involved in a project, you know a lot more about it. When you create something, so what I'm saying is that the people who created Bitcoin, they know a lot more about it, and they can slip something in a deep dark spot where you're not necessarily going to notice it.
No, it doesn't work like that, dude. Bitcoin is one of the most scrutinized sets of code on the planet. And the reason why it is highly scrutinized is because it is highly valuable.
Well, that's
highly valuable.
Well, it has no value.
It is true.
Can you explain to me what the use of it is?
I definitely wanted us to get into this, Ian. So yeah, that's what people are currently paying for it. But Ian, can you explain to him why it has intrinsic value as well? Because we haven't gotten into that yet. And
well,
Silver
it has
Dave has
value, but
made
it doesn't
the...
have nothing has intrinsic value.
So okay, let's not use the word intrinsic.
That's not true either, man.
No.
All right, let's hear what Ian's going to say. I want to hear him explain how Bitcoin
has a value
besides just what dollar value they just assigned to it on.
Well, Bitcoin's value is based on the network. It's based on the number of computers that are running the software and the fact that it does what it says it's going to do, which is allows people to, you know, transact over long or short distances for relatively low cost. There is true value in that, in the cryptographic security and all that. It's not the same sort of thing as being backed by something, although there are cryptocurrencies that are backed by things. But I want to come back around to, you know, just the idea that there's some deep, dark place in the Bitcoin source code, and there is no deep, dark, hidden corner there. Somebody can go through and read that whole thing. And Dave, I think you're a great guy as far as making silver. You do great, good work over there at the local silver mint in Weir, New Hampshire, so you probably don't have time to do this. But if you wanted to, you could learn the programming code You could go in yourself and you could read and you could figure out whether or not this deep, dark, hidden code is there. But you are correct to the extent that if you don't take the time to do that yourself, then yes, you do have to trust other people to do that. But the good news is you probably know enough computer geeks in the libertarian movement who either have already done this or they could do it for you if you wanted them to actually go through and tell you, no, Dave, there is no central control, no freeze button built into Bitcoin. It's just pure fantasy what you're talking about.
Well, I hear you saying
that's
that.
All I got. Thanks, guys.
Oh. Thank you, Ian. I love you. Sorry, I didn't know it was you when I screened the call.
I love you too, Ian.
He has he's paying to talk on the phone, so I think he wanted to get something in. He's still going to be listening.
Yeah,
you can respond.
Well, that's cool, and that's great to hear his voice. And I've had a lot of respect for him as an activist over the years. He's done a lot of things that I think are tremendously powerful. And he was here in Keene when I first came to New Hampshire, and I met with him and a lot of other amazing people, and observed a lot of different. Things that I learned. I learned a ton of stuff from Ian. I don't agree with him in terms of Bitcoin and cryptocurrency. But in a lot of other areas, we agree, and I've learned a ton from him. But just in this one area, don't agree. And I'm really surprised to see people not see the hook in this meat. I'm really surprised by that people are like, oh, yeah, it's like they're going in between these walls. And they're like, no, but the food is good. I've been eating it for days. I've never had a problem before. It should be fine.
Well, let me ask you maybe a slightly different tack to this altogether. So some people, they stack the silver, the gold. They do that because, you know, they're like, oh, everything's going to collapse and then I'm going to have to use this. But there's other people who are kind of like in my, of course, that could happen. And so I also good. Or well off because I have those things, but even without it collapsing, I just want to not use dollars, which are evil. So therefore, I want to use these alternatives. And so, and let's say there is a collapse, but then, you know, 10 years later, we're back on our feet, so to speak, right? So you'd have the gold and the silver, and you could do that for all sorts of in-person exchanges. But how would you do something like ordering something online or from across the country? I mean, even forget online because that might be confusing it. Just think about the fact that we used to have something like Sears catalogs and people used to order stuff from across the country via mail or whatever. How are people going to do their payments with gold and silver? Wouldn't the future of it be a crypto of something, even if there's still the gold and silver?
So, well, that's a great question. And so it sounds like you're asking a few questions, though, at a time. But
I mean, I put a lot in there, yeah.
So first, how does two people that are not geographically close to each other trade stuff? Well, the same way with the Sears catalog that you mentioned, back in those days, you sent them a check, and then they sent you the pants or the shirts or whatever thong Colin was buying. So they sent. So in this case,
people about that on air. Dave.
Sorry about that. That was my bad. I forgot.
But I'll have it on later. Don't worry.
Thank you. You just ruined my life. Anyway, okay, and stole my childhood. But anyway, so Greta Thunberg. So
he stole my childhood. Yeah.
Yes. I'm trying to get back on track. Oh yes. So it goes
Sears
back
catalog.
To you can send some silver in the mail, and they can send you the thing. Now, in modern times where we've gotten into an area of electronic payments, well, not like being religious here, but this is more just a phrase, the devil operates in the area of convenience. And so you're like, wow, it's so convenient that I can send cryptocurrency and I can send it anywhere at any time and it doesn't have any, infinitely divide. Well, those are indicators that it's so convenient that that's where the devil operates. So if you say that convenience is great, and I like convenience, but
anything, it's just paranoia.
That's why I walk everywhere.
Well, but it's just true that, yeah, the more convenient things get, you get soft. And that's why Colin walks everywhere, and that's why he's so, chiseled and sculpted.
The thing about it is, just because something could be true, and you're explaining... because I make this comment all the time that people, I hate when I hear people my age saying like, blah, 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 this thing that's obviously control. It's so convenient. Like, I just swipe my phone to pay and I pay with Apple Pay. It's so convenient. I hate that too. It's inconvenience is definitely an area where, quote unquote, they are going to get us to hand over more and more control. But when you're talking about cryptocurrency and you say, oh, it could be, it, the fact that this is convenient just as a sign, that's just a claim with nothing to back it up.
Well, but it's one more of a thousand things.
Well, and what I was saying was a little different. What I'm saying is, if you're going to use something like a check or Western Union or even taking the silver and putting it in a thing and shipping it to the other person with all the issues that there are with that, wouldn't it be the case that we could just have a new technology for that specific thing, which is long-distance, impersonal transfers?
I like local markets. I kind of want to get things like from local places. Right now, the way that the world has been organized
But think about all the things. Just, I mean, have you ever done an audit of the things in your own life? How many of them are actually local?
But can I expand on that? So, first of all, I like local things. And the food, for example, like the food industry, and when you buy food at the grocery store, it mostly comes from a few centralized locations where it's mass produced and mass distributed, and they're putting all kinds of toxic poisons in it. And so that is not that good. And I would rather be finding, and I'm going to make a point, I promise, I would rather be going to local markets and buying meat from a local farmer. Now, the reason why that centrally produced food is in that way is it's been subsidized by the government and by the people that own the government in order for them to control it and cause you to buy it because they've made it cheaper. But in my vision, I like local things, and I would rather not have a market that's been manipulated into making me buy everything from 1,000 miles away. That way it can be shut off on me someday.
Well, there's a lot of products, though, that aren't like the food and things like that, that are going to be made, you know, in a mass produced way in one central place, like, for instance, cars or certain types of electronics or there's just a lot. I mean, and like I was saying, when I was saying go through your life and look at it, I wasn't like calling you a hypocrite, like, oh, look at all these things that you buy that are from. I was just saying, like, look at all the things that you buy. How many of them could be produced locally? Now, a lot of them can. We're getting a lot better technologies these days, and that's something that's like continually blowing me away with 3D printing and things like that, where you can actually make more and more of these things locally. But there's still a lot of things that are not going to be produced that way anytime soon in any cheap or, you know, way. Yeah.
The problem with this is, and I realize where you're going, is the thing is that there could be some sort of a system where people could have, you know, there could even be banks that are spread around and that you could send, you know, a check, or you could send a digital check, for example, and they could be redeemable for silver and gold on deposit at a place. But the problem, of course, is that as you get more and more into that, eventually it becomes what we have now, which is a system of tyranny that's been perverted out of once sound money. So that is like a slippery slope. But it is possible that things could be done where people could make exchanges, even geographically, using a combination of digital and physical things.
I always say to people is that, you know, everything that precious metals can't do, crypto can do, and everything that crypto
they complement
can't,
each other
yeah, they're,
so well.
They really do. Yeah.
I do not want to let our callers hang on too long. So, Rob in Vermont, you had something you wanted to add to this conversation. Rob, what's on your mind?
I have a question to ask, and then I have something that's very important I want to share with the community, the radio listening community.
So go ahead and ask your question.
My question is, are we able to send cryptocurrency through like a ham radio wave or a CB radio wave yet?
People have done that, but I don't think there is any like...
Wow.
Yeah, people have definitely done it. I know I've heard of people doing it, but there's not like... It's not just out there. It's not like everybody has a thing on their phone that they're using to do that.
Wow.
But but they could conceivably do it. And so I know that the people who do things that I know about with mesh networks and stuff like that are working on making like smaller and cheaper, like little devices you can buy for like maybe $18 or $20 that run on like solar or just a little battery. And then you'll be able to just send your crypto. And then it's like, we will control the internet ourselves. So
good luck.
So they won't. Well, I mean, it's, I mean, people need,
maybe,
people,
about, like, making
people,
your
show
own.
Me now.
No, people
show
need,
me now.
Wait, 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 people need,
send someone Bitcoin from your radio. Just show me someone do this.
No, no, that's what I'm saying. I can't do it literally right now. I don't have one of those devices on me, but it can be done. But actually, this brings up an even larger kind of topic, which I see to be a flaw. Well, I don't necessarily want to say flaw, but a problem that all of these things that we're talking about have. Whether we're talking about the gold, silver, crypto, what I see is there's not enough people adopting these things, and we really need that network size. And I say network, even when talking about silver and gold, we don't have enough people using it to where it's an alternative, if you know what I'm saying. I mean, right now, what I see with silver and gold is people just stack it. But, you know, and then that changes the way they look at it, too. So I know you sell
Bitcoin,
the small.
Too. It's annoying when they do it.
No, it is. It is. I think everybody should be trying to get as many people to use and take these things. Like, we don't have to wait for
gold
any kind
too.
Of collapse. We could just
and
start
silver.
Using this stuff now and not use their evil money.
Well, you know what? That's a great idea, Colin. Let me start by doing this. People are like, oh, I don't know how to use Bitcoin. Well, you can get your phone and your computer and scan and do all this stuff. Well, let me show you how to use silver. Colin, can I pour this in your hand? Watch
Wait,
this.
What is that?
Oh, look, it's 1/10 ounce silver. All I had to do is just hand it to him. How do you use this stuff? Or you hand it to someone?
Let the record state that he put candy in my hand. No, I'm kidding.
They,
this is
they
actual
feel like
silver.
Candy.
It is
Here,
actual
can
silver.
I pour some
yes.
in your hand? Watch this. This is so easy. Dave, how do I use it? Oh, well, you just pour it in the person's hand.
Oh, no. I'm saying I want as many people to start accepting
can you
it.
Somebody, you know? Can you send these to Jack? Can everyone get some of these in their hand? Look at how easy it is to use. It just, it falls in your hand, and then they give you something back. Wow. This technology, it's so hard to imagine.
Oh, I'm sorry, I dropped mine on the floor.
Doesn't go through like a Fed blockchain or the NSA technology that the blockchain is based on called SHA-256. Anyway, don't worry about that.
So I did want to touch on that. We're getting close to the end of this segment, but Rob, you also
you guys
said
can
you
keep
had,
those. Oops,
you had another thing you wanted
you
to bring up. Oh, thank you.
Yeah, yeah. Everyone should just keep those. Don't give them back. Keep
thank
them.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, stack them up.
What I wanted to say is that there's a town over in Vermont named Morristown,
mm-hmm.
and there's a little farm that's over there. This older gentleman and I believe his wife, they have a small farm where they produce milk and you know, probably something similar to what Jay has.
Okay.
And so the state of Vermont wants to shut this farm down because the farmer has an outdated boiler system.
And what's the name of the farm?
So,
sorry, I don't mean to laugh at their misfortune.
No, it's standard government work.
Farm, but it's been in the paper.
That's a really sad story, and it's like just such a good example of what government does. Government just goes after people trying to be productive for silly little things just because they want more and more and more control. And they probably don't want you growing your own food or raising your own animals. But we're going to continue on this topic. 603-283-6160. It's Free Talk Live. Don't go anywhere.
Looking for that edge during those intimate moments? We see many ads for enhancement, but the side effects include death. At GCN Team, we should change the Healthy Body Brain and Heart Pack to the Healthy Libido Pack. The brain and heart are not the only organs that require a healthy vascular system. For proper blood flow at the right moment, go to GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203. That's 877-878-4203. That's 877-878-4203.
G'day, I'm Jamel that works with Dr. Joel Wallach and the GCN team with Youngevity at teamg'day.com. By becoming an associate, you provide income for you and your family on your own hours while working from home. So contact me, Jamel, by filling in the contact box at teamg'day.com and I will get back to you personally and provide all the support you need to get started and build your Youngevity business. Teamg'day.com. Teamg'day.com.
USA News Update. President Biden expressed his dissatisfaction with humanitarian conditions in Gaza during a phone call with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu Thursday. The conversation, lasting approximately 30 minutes, included a discussion about the recent airstrikes that resulted in the deaths of 7 aid workers from the World Central Kitchen. In Georgia, a judge has ruled that remarks supposedly made by former President Trump do not qualify for protection under the First Amendment. The judge specified that these alleged comments were made in furtherance of criminal activity. Trump's motion to dismiss the election interference case against him, where he faces charges of interference, was unsuccessful. Meteorologists are forecasting an extremely active hurricane season ahead. Colorado State University researchers anticipate 23 named storms and 11 hurricanes, with 5 potentially reaching major Category 3 or higher status. John Schaefer, USA News.
I am a non-attorney spokesperson representing a team of lawyers who help people that have been injured or wronged. If you've been involved in a serious car, truck, or motorcycle accident or injured at work, you have rights and you may be entitled to money for your suffering. Don't accept an offer you get from an insurance company until you talk to a lawyer. And we represent some of the best personal injury lawyers you can find. Tough lawyers that will fight to win your case. And they're so good they stake their reputation on it by only getting paid if you win. So if you've been in a serious car, truck, or motorcycle accident or hurt on the job, find out today for free what kind of compensation you may be entitled to. Call the legal helpline right now.
800-509-4492. 800-509-4492. 800-509-4492. That's 800-509-4492.
Get healthy, not high, with 100% pure CBD powerful natural pain relief from Veterans Vitality. GCN listeners, have you ever thought about how CBD may help you? I'm sure you have heard about the many benefits of CBD. Well, here's your opportunity to try before you buy. Created by veterans and for everyone who deserves better choices, our CBD is derived from organic hemp, grown in the USA, and third-party tested. Veterans Vitality CBD saves you as much as 25 to 50% over our competition, and a portion of all sales is contributed to veteran nonprofits and events. Many of our customers have experienced improved quality of life, help with anxiety, PTSD, and overall well-being. Our products do not contain THC. They are safe, non-addictive, effective, and 100% legal. GCN listeners, get your free trial bottle of premium CBD by simply paying shipping and handling at GCNFreeCBD.com. That's GCNFreeCBD.com. Again, GCNFreeCBD.com. Offered by Veterans Vitality Premium CBD.
We still do email. Drop your email address in the entry box at freetalklive.com, and you'll be kept in the loop with Free Talk Live.
Control and 603-283-6160 is the phone number here. We're here, Colin and I are talking to Silver Dave, and Silver Dave is talking to us, and that's what we're taking calls about tonight. We're talking about silver, gold, cryptocurrency, alternative currency. Sorry, I couldn't think of that word right now. But Free Talk Live is brought to you by ForkFest, happening June 13th through the 16th at Rogers Campground in the beautiful White Mountains of New Hampshire. ForkFest is a fork of the Porcupine Freedom Festival. ForkFest is decentralized, so there's no ticket cost and no one is in charge. For more information and to connect with other attendees, you can visit the unofficial website ForkFest.party. That's ForkFest.party. And since this person just called in at the beginning of the segment, I don't want to make them wait the whole time so I can screen them. I'm going to ask, unscreened caller, are you calling in on topic about alternative currencies?
Yeah. Yes, I am. I'm here to answer a question about the radio thing and to give Colin a hard time about some of his opinions about computer security.
Okay, go ahead.
You're only allowed to talk about one of those things, so choose wisely.
You can talk about it.
I got to give you a hard time.
Let's start off about the radio. I'm really interested in that. Is that what you said?
So to answer your question about, or the previous caller's question about radio, all a cryptographic, all a cryptocurrency transaction is essentially is a piece of data that's been cryptographically signed in its simplest form. And once that piece of data has been cryptographically signed, it needs to be communicated to a device that's online, but not necessarily a device that's particularly intelligent or trustworthy. And that can be done via a QR code, or it can be done via RF, or it can be done by all kinds of means that a lot of people don't really think about. You know, there's a lot of people, for example, that will have a couple of different phones that they use, and one phone is where they store their cryptography, their cryptocurrency. And that phone is always in airplane mode, and it's never connected to Wi-Fi. And when they're doing transactions, they'll just create this QR code that they can then scan, and then off it goes on the other device, which is much less trustworthy. And there's actually a fellow at Porkfest a couple of years ago named Patrick, some of you may know him, who was distributing these portable devices called, I think they're called Gotenna. But if you Google Bitcoin and radio, it's like the first thing that comes up. And so people are definitely doing transactions over RF, over radio. So that's definitely been done before. And in fact, that's a awesome. Lot of cryptography, you know, people think about it being this thing that needs to be connected to the internet or needs this huge modern computer kind of a thing, when that's really not the case. You can do pretty advanced cryptography with devices that are really cheap to build and operate, and can just create these very small messages that you can then blast over RF or whatever, even over audio, just like an old school modem, you know.
So let me get this straight. I mean, I obviously understand that, you know, you're just sending the data through the radio waves, but what you're saying is that they actually have, like, let's say, like, a protocol for it and what frequencies to use and all of that. Like, it's like a seamless thing that people can just do, like, for transmitting crypto via radio?
Yeah, so I've never done it before myself, but I've heard about it before. And so just during the break, I did a really quick Google search, and people are saying use TXTenna and the Samurai wallet, and it works. And I would bet that if you bothered to look it up on YouTube, there's probably a guy showing you how to do it in a five-minute tutorial.
Well,
but
you
one of the
can't
points
do
that
it.
I'm making
Sorry,
with that
caller.
Is...
The FCC has declared that encryption is illegal. So does that mean that they can't do it legally?
No, that's incorrect.
Oh.
Encryption is illegal on ham bands. That's probably what you're referring to. Encryption's perfectly legal. It's everywhere. It's in Wi-Fi. I mean Wi-Fi is encrypted.
Oh, okay. So I was kind of joking, considering I don't care what's illegal, but I just thought that was an annoying little thing that popped up as I'm Googling this stuff while you're talking. Honestly, to be honest,
sure.
It doesn't all make sense to me, but that's kind of what's great about having, like, a community of people who care about freedom. It's like the people who are radio computer geniuses can understand that stuff and bring it up on online as soon as the government closes stuff down, and I just love that.
Well, I just want to make one more quick point on that, and then I'll give Colin a hard time, which he deserves.
Mm-hmm.
The point
I
is...
I will find out where this guy lives, and I will take it out on him. Oh, wait, sorry, in a nonviolent fashion.
Colin. Oh, Colin.
He said, please.
The point I was getting to with that is that there's a device that's highly trusted that's never connected to the internet, which is where the cryptographic operations happen, signing the crypto transactions, and then there's a device that is somewhere else that's relatively untrusted that is connected to the broader network, which is where the transmission of that transaction actually occurs. So with Bitcoin or cryptocurrency over RF or over radio, that's kind of how it happens, is there's a trusted device that does the actual transaction and sends it to the less trusted device that then puts it out onto a wider network where other miners, for example, can validate the transaction and it gets added to the ledger, the blockchain.
So does that answer anybody's questions? Does that answer anybody's questions you guys had?
Yes, that was very interesting, and thank you for that information.
Definitely interesting.
I
want to respond to this. Actually,
you sold
just
Dave
say,
on it. Actually,
yeah,
well, he's ready.
Has,
he's going to start doing this with silver.
I mean, he's probably right. It's possible, but he said he hasn't done it himself. He's just heard of people doing it. But do I think that it's possible that you might be able to send Bitcoin through a radio? Yeah, maybe that's possible. But what's the point? Let me explain that a little further. Slave money versus actual money. So I'm really amazed.
Let me respond to you really quick on that. And I'm not even going to argue with you. I'm going to say I can send a cryptographically signed statement to you saying I owe you 3/10 ounce pieces of silver. You know, I can create a cryptographic statement. And that really kind of solves another problem that you were talking about a minute ago, which is how do you send silver a great distance? And this doesn't even suppose the existence of a blockchain. It doesn't even suppose the existence of an internet or any kind of digital network. It just says, does cryptography exist? Yes. Can I make a provably signed cryptographic statement? Yes. Okay, I owe you some silver. Signed. Boom. Over it goes on the RF. And that could be encrypted, or it could be public. It could be public knowledge that I owe Dave silver, or it could be private knowledge that Dave might selectively disclose. But should he choose to disclose it in that selective case, he can prove, hey, this fellow actually does owe me the silver according to this cryptographically signed statement.
The value in that cryptographically signed statement is the theory that I'm going to get some silver from you. But the statement by itself is worthless. It is the theory that we're going to get something, that you're going to give me silver in this message. And if you actually give me the silver, then it makes, you know, your crypto messages a little more valuable than the person who doesn't follow through. But that brings me to the point that I wanted to make a moment ago that I'm still on, is to explain that the difference between something and nothing. And for thousands of years, the oldest trick in the book has been to get people to trade actual assets, silver, gold, copper, land, for pieces of paper or tickets that the king prints. Now, here we are, fast forward, the newest kind of ticket is a digital ticket, a digital, controllable, trackable, traceable ticket that the king can print for even a lower cost than the paper ones. And he can control it while it circulates, and he can track everywhere it goes. And so the big difference here is intrinsic worth. Colin said there is no intrinsic worth. There is intrinsic worth. For example, if you like candles, you need wax and a string to make a candle. If you like, look at this. This is a lighter. See me lighting it? Mm-hmm. If you want to lighter...
Let the record show that he has picked up a lighter and lit it.
Yep.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. So this lighter, you can't make this lighter without butane, without flint, without plastic, without steel. You can't make this lighter with digits. Can I just finish my point here?
Sure.
So you can't make this lighter without those materials. And so those materials have an intrinsic worth because they have a value to keep. And that's the important distinction. Intrinsic worth means that you have a value.
You're getting backwards.
I'm really close to making my point.
Can I just finish my point?
I'm really close here. So the point is that intrinsic worth means it has a value to keep. And so if it has no value to keep, its only value is to give it to other people for other stuff that has no intrinsic worth. And then its value is fiat by declaration. And so Bitcoin, it's like digital declaration, but it has no value except what people are saying in dollars its value is. But there's no use to having Bitcoin. And ledgers, digital ledgers, and cryptographic ledgers have existed since the beginning of the internet. So there's nothing special here except that you're getting nothing. You're getting a picture of a hamburger instead of an actual hamburger. And it's important to know the difference. I'm done. Go ahead.
If I could say something.
Let me respond to a couple things he said, because a lot of stuff that he said is wrong, but I'm not even going to bother refuting.
Well, a lot of it's wrong by definition. Like, he's not getting using the right words.
I'm not going to go there. Yeah. I'm not going to go there. I just want to make one quick statement about this whole concept of value and me signing something cryptographically. If you value reputation, then you can track reputation based on this cryptographic signature of a thing. And this, again, it doesn't have to be public. It can just be like, hey, you know, you provably said that you were going to pay me the silver. Here's the statement that you made. Provably, you know, you signed it cryptographically. Now I'm going to go to Colin. I'm going to say, hey, this guy said he was going to pay me some silver, and he didn't. And here's the statement that he, cryptographic statement that he made. Saying that, signed it cryptographically, and so you can have reputation within the system, and if you value reputation, then there you go. But
That's a picture of a hamburger, not the actual hamburger. And crypto has no promise for silver. No. So where's the beef?
I'll
send you a digital hamburger.
I understand what you said.
Doesn't sound
as you should say it again,
Dave. I'm going to pick on Colin.
But I wanted you to pick on me.
Yeah, I want to get the intrinsic value thing answered here. But okay, go ahead. What did I say wrong?
Well, you didn't say anything wrong. I'm going to sound like I'm siding with Dave, but I'm not really.
Sounds like he is. It's like, all right, I agree with you, but don't tell anybody.
Did he pay you to call in with silver?
I did. I paid him in digital promises for silver.
Yeah, and then you didn't,
which actually is occurring right now. When you see me next, you should ask me so I can sprinkle a few 1/10 ounce pieces of silver in your hand.
He gave me like, 5.
Well, I just gave some really to everyone in the room. I should give you some. Oh, go ahead. Tell me, and I'll change my mind. No,
make fun of me.
No. I was just going to say, Colin. You know, you come across as a computer security expert right now. So I'm wondering if you've heard about the underhanded C competition, for one, really low level instruction set processing stuff that is just really spooky, like Spectre and Meltdown, where you think that a processor is just this generic calculator, when in fact it's doing all of these it's doing all this prefetching.
Can somebody explain?
But basically, okay, so, you know, a calculator is this very generic purpose machine, right? Mm-hmm. It can add, it can subtract and multiply and can do all these things. But what people who are building processors have decided in their infinite wisdom, I say that very sarcastically, is that, well, people seem to be doing a lot of this type of operation and that type of operation. So we're going to optimize the supposedly general purpose processors, computers, to do these operations faster than they would otherwise be able to do them, which has caused some really bad security vulnerabilities within hardware. So it becomes the point where we're at right now in the industry is if you have a modern computer, and by modern I mean made after, let's say, 2008, you either have to accept the possibility that there's this really low level, I'm trying to make myself FCC approved here, manipulation happening or the possibility of manipulation of the ones and zeros on the chip, or if you're concerned about that, then you have to use their proprietary closed source patch to that solution.
Go ahead.
There's another point, I forget what it was, but it was along the same lines of
can I ask, maybe, like, is this the point you're trying to make, uh-huh, that, like, are you trying to say that, does this have something to do with us saying crypto and the backdoor?
In a way, he's saying the processors themselves aren't secure.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, I'm kind of making the argument. I mean, I'm...
But then somebody could make their own that's more secure, right?
Sort of.
Certainly, you know, if you have a factory.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Can I jump in on this a little bit?
Mm-hmm.
So, really good feedback here. Okay, we talked with Ian before, and he talked about how the cheat code, anyone who is like looking through would find the cheat code, someone could find that. Well, it goes back to that the cheat code may be in a different place than you're thinking to look. And I'm about to tell you, I want to blow the doors off of Bitcoin and Monero and tell you how all of it's 100% trackable and controllable. And I'm going to explain it to you here
in under 60 seconds.
Let me jump in and say one last thing, because I remember the third point I was going to make, and then I'll shut up, because I wanted to give Colin a hard time. Damn it,
It's okay. That's not FCC a problem, but okay.
Oh, hey, hooray.
Go ahead. The other thing I wanted
again,
to ask you, I just wanted to ask you if you like me or Colin more on the record on Free Talk Live.
Oh, well, you know, he's across the telephone network from me, but somehow he's managing to hold a gun to my head. I don't know how, so you're going to have to go with Colin.
He just won't admit it, but he does like me more. Anyways, what was your last point about the computers?
I'm sorry.
I really messed you up, I think.
You were still talking about the chips and all of that and how they might be compromised.
I was going to say. Thompson compiler bug. All right. So there's all this code, and we can go through all the code, and we can say, well, you know, there's provably no backdoors in the code. And we can, for the sake of argument, let's say we do that.
Corrupted compilers?
For certain. Thompson compiler bug. You got it.
Yeah.
Here's my criticism to you, Colin. Thompson compiler bug. How do we trust the compiler? How do we trust the compiler that compiles the compiler recursively forever? How do we trust the chips themselves? How do we trust that these people who have gone through the code are smart enough necessarily to catch the underhanded insertion of malicious code into the program?
I think the one answer to that is the sheer number of people who are in the communities who do that, like the number of people who are in the various Linux communities that double check code that goes on to, you know, various GitHubs and things like that.
Plus, they have a monetary incentive.
There's a possibility that can eliminate the underhanded C competition kind of aspect of it.
Yeah.
The underhanded C competition is write a computer program that looks like it does a really simple function, but actually does something malicious. But because of the complexity of the program and the scale of it, it would not necessarily be detected because, again, of the complexity and just there's like, you know, this is only 1/10% evil. This is only 1/10% evil, but it adds up, and then eventually you get something that's essentially a virus. Thompson C, the Thompson compiler bug, you know, a compiler that creates a bad compiler creates a bad compiler that falsely compiles Bitcoin code that you verified is, you know, provable. Anyway, and the Spectre meltdown, low level bugs. Those are my three arguments against Colin's position, or kind of curious to hear his responses to them, I guess. And you started to respond, and then I kind of interrupted you. I was going to lose my train of thought if I didn't.
Well, so, thank you so much for the call.
I will appeal to authority.
I need somebody
on this
to describe this more. No,
yeah.
Instead of answering, nobody knows what he was just talking about. I don't know what he's just talking about, so simplify it. By nobody, I mean the listeners, and I mean me.
So the compiler takes those descriptions of what you want to do, like add this number, multiply this number, if this, then do that. Those are just descriptions. So that's generic. What the compiler does is the compiler says, okay, we need an adding function. We need to, this is a variable. And then it will do that and it will change that into an actual, like a binary code that will actually run on the machine. Now, that in and of itself is also a thing, this action of compiling. And so somebody has to write a compiler or create a compiler. Now, that's a really generic tool, so you would have to, like, if you put something into the compiler, and I'm kind of speculating a little bit because I'm not, it's a little bit above my pay grade, but if you put something in, you don't know what a person's going to code. So I don't think you can actually just put something in like, oh, we'll make the compiler make a bad Bitcoin thing. Hmm. Or let's say the compiler of the compiler for the Bitcoin. You couldn't do that because you wouldn't know what the code is that the person's going to produce ahead of time. So I think I would say that. But also, all of the things that you're asking are actually questions that I asked of TJ. That's why I say I'm going to appeal to authority. I asked him all these questions, and he had answers to them. I was
TJ
actually,
the spy. He's a mathematician, and he's a genius. So.
I was trying to see if I could get him to call in tonight to answer some of these things. Well, like, for instance, and I'm not like necessarily going to put these words into Dave's mouth, but some people have said things like, oh, well, you know, the NSA created, like, the SHA-256 or something like that. Well, the NSA only has so many employees, and only so many of them are mathematicians, and it might only be a number like 20 or 30, but there's like, I don't know, 10,000 universities, and they have math professors at all of them, you know, maybe 10, 20, 30, depending on the size of the department. So you have, what would that number be, like, you know, 100,000 mathematicians around the world compared to the 20 or 30 that are at the NSA. So they can look through all of those papers and look through all the math and double check it. So it's the idea that the NSA could create something completely unique. I mean, the action of creating unique things is always an individual thing to be done. So yeah, they might have a guy who's created an individually brilliant thing like that, but it's probably not.
Well, the thing is, the NSA did patent SHA-256, but they patented all of SHA-2, and there are tons of different variations of it. 256 is the math that Bitcoin uses in order, the miners use SHA-256 in order to verify a block on the crypto currency, I mean the Bitcoin ledger. And just to simplify it, that means that everybody who's mining Bitcoin, they're running a computer that's basically doing math for them. The computer basically says, is this the answer? Now let me use SHA-256 to check. And then it checks. And then when it finally finds the right answer, it is rewarded with Bitcoin. That's like highly simplified. But the thing about it is that I would argue about against, so people not saying necessarily, Dave, because I just don't remember from his video, but he brought up this kind of conspiracy theory that because the NSA patented SHA-2, well, that means that they are controlling it, and that's proof that it's bad. And I would just have to say, well, it's like saying that because the Phoenicians invented the alphabet, they're controlling like my speech right now. It's
but they
no.
are.
Oh, so, no, so I'm kidding. So you're saying, and I already know this, but you're admitting that SHA-256 is owned by the NSA, and that's the technology that the blockchain uses to reward miners. And you're telling me that the NSA owns the patent for the technology that Bitcoin uses, and Bitcoin is not under their control?
Yes, I am saying that. Because,
that's really weird.
Because if the Muslims or the Phoenicians could say they made up this thing called patent and said, we patent the alphabet, it doesn't really mean anything as far as me using
it. They have men with guns that will defend that patent.
Well, that's not the aspect of it. That's not the, yeah. I mean, that's
surprised. I'm surprised that you don't see.
A patent. No, that's completely different. I mean, like a patent is saying nobody else can use this without my permission.
Why do you think they patented that if it was not of use to them?
It is of use to them. It's just like somebody used it for a purpose called Bitcoin and gave it to the world. And the thing about it is they brought it out to
the tale.
Libertarians first. And I don't understand why the NSA would want to enrich libertarians.
Right. They used the libertarian group in order to be the root spreader of the idea of crypto. So this has to go way back, and that the idea is that the global power elite knew that if they came up with a digital currency, they wanted to make it popular. Well, the problem is that there would be a bunch of liberty-minded people who would say, no, this is just like dollars, only digital and trackable and traceable. So what they decided to do was they added a narrative to it, and they told people that it's freedom and liberty, and that this secret Satoshi Nakamoto guy made it to save the world, and that central banks hate this stuff even though they own the patent for the technology it uses. And that's part of the narrative because they wanted the libertarian community to spread Bitcoin instead of be the opposition to it.
Well, that's also an interesting speculation, but it's not proven or anything. 603-283-6160. Do you have an opinion on this topic? Call in and let Silver Dave know what you think about it. He has definitely been answering all of our questions and rebuttals, and it's an interesting conversation. It's Free Talk Live. 603-283-6160. More coming up.
If you're concerned about the power grid and want to generate your own supply of off-grid electricity, this will be the most important message you'll hear this year. Here's why. We now have a small number of solar generators back in stock. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving backup power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, solar generators run quietly, emit no dangerous fumes, and produce an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. Whether it's wildfires, dangerous weather, power grid issues, or just getting off the grid, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. Even better, all this week, radio listeners get over $700 in free off-the-grid bonuses, too. Go to MySolarBackup.com to learn more and check availability. That's MySolarBackup.com. Look for the free report, Crisis Cooling, how to make absolutely sure your meat, milk, and medicines stay safe and cool in any power outage. Yours free at MySolarBackup.com.
Are you a business owner? Are you confused by the complexity of the tax laws? We can help. I'm Dan Pilla, and I've been helping business owners solve tax problems for over 40 years. My book, The Small Business Tax Guide, shows proven ways to avoid all the common business tax problems. Don't risk your business. Go to DanPilla.com to order your copy. That's DanPilla.com. Order now and get a free 15-minute call directly with me, a $99 value. Go to DanPilla.com. That's DanPilla.com.
Do you know someone with a drug or alcohol problem? Get help now. Insurance may cover everything. Stop the drug and alcohol nightmare. Call 800-284-0523. Learn how through the Family Medical Leave Act, you can leave your job without losing your job. Locations everywhere. Get immediate help for drug and alcohol problems. Call now. 800-284-0523. 800-284-0523.